Crying children screaming from somewhere down below. Once the shopping malls are gleaming and no one needs to know how many babies' bodies are in this soil that we've tilled. Once the last Palestinians killed. Once the last Palestinians killed. Once the last Palestinians killed.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the late American poet Maya Angelou famously said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. In this case, behind its liberal humanist rhetoric, what it has shown time and again is a ruthless devotion to capitalist ventures at home and abroad, whether bankrolling the laying of pipelines over the lands and bodies of indigenous in British Columbia, or vouchsafing the corporate plunder of Asia, Africa, South America, and the Caribbean. Canada consistently reveals itself, and you can believe the people in those places trod underfoot know what they're looking at, even if Canadians largely don't see it. Viviana Herrera is Latin American Program Coordinator for Mining Watch Canada, and what they're looking at right now is the surging violence surrounding Canadian mining projects in Ecuador and ongoing free trade talks between the two countries underway. Viviana, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, last month, Mining Watch Canada released human rights organization Sound Alarm as Canada-Ecuador trade talks get underway. That reports surging violence surrounding Canadian mining projects in Ecuador. Which projects, Viviana, are of concern, and what violence has been reported?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is something that we're very, very concerned, and that we, you know, ever since we learned about the beginning of the free trade talks between Canada and Ecuador back in December 2022, we as Mining Watch Canada, but also other Canadian civil society organizations such as Amnesty International Canada, the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, Kairos, which is an ecumenical organization, many others, we've been sounding the alarm about these free trade agreement talks. Why? Because of what you just mentioned. Because as Canada is trying to advance a free trade agreement, violence in Ecuador is increasing. Violence related to Canadian mining projects. And we see this pretty much all over the country, in the majority of Canadian mining projects, all the way from the Amazon through the Paramos, the ecologically sensitive highlands in Ecuador, all the way also to the center of the country. So we see violence increasing throughout the country, and all of this related to communities, campesino and indigenous communities trying to resist the advancement of Canadian mining projects without free, prior, and informed consent.
And who are the actors, Viviana, of this violence? Are these people paid by or believed to be paid by the companies involved, or are they in the pay of government or just locals that feel that they could get employment and that the campesinos are getting in the way?
So in the case of probably the most recent case related to violence in Ecuador is related to a Canadian mining company, Atico Mining, that is trying to advance La Plata mining project in a very 100 kilometers from Quito, the capital city of Ecuador. So in this region, which is, you know, they have, this is a region that is focused on agroecology, on, you know, growing coffee and, you know, vegetables. They don't have, they're not interested in mining. So this is why the communities have been resisting this mining project. But what communities have been telling us is that the mining company is funding paramilitary groups in order to work alongside police officials in Ecuador in order to conduct an environmental consultation in the region in order to advance the project and later on get the social license. So this is something that we've been listening from, you know, we've been hearing from communities. They've been saying that the company is financing paramilitary groups to instill violence in the region, to intimidate community members not to engage in their, you know, rightful, in their right to exercise their right to social protest. We are looking into it. Human rights organizations in Ecuador are also looking into it. For example, the Alliance for Human Rights in Ecuador, this is something that they've also denounced in a few statements that they've put out since the month of March, which is when March 2024, which is the second time that we've seen violence in the territory because of these mining operation.
Well, and in the Mining Watch's release, human rights organizations sound alarm as Canada, Ecuador trade talks get underway. They cite the Alliance for Human Rights in Ecuador does. That's the English translation of the organization's name. A March 19th protest that came under attack by police. And it says that over 70 people were charged on accusation of terrorism. And they've effectively criminalizing their rights to protest. Do you know, Viviana, what the fate of those people arrested is, if they are still being held, or what kind of penalties they may face with these kinds of charges?
No, they are still facing these charges. And so we are still denouncing this. Because this, we see this sort of like, you know, the legal techniques that companies used in order to intimidate and silence environmental defenders, right? We see this all the way from Argentina to Canada, where companies, oil, gas, mining companies, use these tactics in order to silence environmental defenders. So yes, they're still facing these charges. They're mobilizing in Ecuador in order to bring awareness about this. I know they've also raised this issue with the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights, and this has been looked into since the criminalization charges came to light.
Well, you mentioned, Viviana, things going on in a variety and a number of countries in Latin America. Where does Ecuador stand in its human rights, in the human rights index right now? They've got a fairly new president in Daniel Noboa. What kind of government is he running down there?
Yeah, as you are pointing it out, Ecuador has a new government led by President Daniel Noboa, who was elected back in December, November 2023. And he was elected, he's a pro-mining, pro-business president. You know, his family has been involved in the banana trade in Ecuador. He belongs to one of the richest families in the country. So, as you can imagine, the kind of economic and political rhetoric that he's been promoting in Ecuador, but also abroad, is one of trying to attract international investment into the country. And by doing so, he's been very eager in advancing and accelerating free trade agreements, for example, like this one with Canada. Ecuador recently also signed a free trade agreement with China just a few months ago in January 2023. Also another one with Costa Rica in the same month. Daniel Noboa, the president of Ecuador, was just a few weeks ago here in Canada in March 2024. So at the same time, almost at the same time that violence was erupting in Ecuador because of Atico's mining operations in Palo Quemado, that's the area that we were just discussing before, almost at the same time, 1 week before that, President Noboa was in Toronto, Canada, in order to participate in the biggest mining convention that is organized every year in Toronto. All the mining ecosystem comes together in order to talk about mining, but especially to promote and seek capital to advance mining projects. So he was here to pretty much say, we are open to business. Ecuador is open to business, and Ecuador, we want to be the next mining destination. That was the slogan used by Ecuador during this mining convention. So it's very clear where, the mining policy is heading. It's heading to in Ecuador, and what is the what's the agenda? And so, in all of this, the free trade agreement between Canada and Ecuador fits very well, right, for that pro-mining, neoliberal, capitalistic vision.
Well, and that fits in well with the current Canadian government and every Canadian government for forever. I would pause it. But they, for its part, the Canadian government says that this is a deal that they claim is modern, ambitious, and inclusive, this trade agreement. What is modern about this? Is there anything, is that just a word, or is there something different about this trade agreement than past deals that Canada has signed with other countries in the resource extraction business?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We've been looking into it with our Canadian allies and studying, how Canada has been promoting this free trade agreement. And as you mentioned, one of the things that they've been talking about in pretty much, they mentioned this in their press releases, is that this is going to be a modern free trade agreement with modern chapters in terms of indigenous rights and a feminist policy. However, when you look actually into it, we realize that what they're talking about is not so much, they're not talking about human rights or indigenous rights. What they mean by modern chapter is that their focus is, indigenous businesses, or like businesses led by indigenous women. This goes against or contrary to what communities on the ground in Ecuador are saying. They don't want business from Ecuador, from Canada. What they want is for Canada to respect their indigenous rights to self-determination and their rights to be a sovereign country. Despite of the language being used, this is just it's just discourse, and it's not actually based on real commitments to human rights. Another thing that you just said, in terms of the language used by Canada, in terms of saying that this is going to be an inclusive free trade agreement, is that we've called out the Canadian government for this. Because even though they say that this is an inclusive free trade agreement, Ecuadorians, indigenous peoples, campesino communities, environmental organizations in Ecuador have not been consulted on this free trade agreement. They haven't been included in any of these talks. So what Folks in Ecuador have been telling us, they've put out statements which we have translated into English, organized a webinar, and we've tried to open up spaces here in Canada to make sure to amplify those voices in Ecuador, because the Canadian government nor the Ecuadorian government have opened that those spaces for Ecuadorians to speak about what they actually think about this free trade agreement. So that's something that we've also been trying to highlight about this double discourse about being an inclusive free trade agreement. It hasn't.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Viviana Herrera. Viviana is Latin American Program Coordinator for Mining Watch Canada. They're right now looking at the efforts between Canada and Ecuador to set up a new investor state dispute settlement or free trade agreement by another name between the two countries. Viviana, in the Mining Watch release, you say that there has been complaints from Indigenous communities in Ecuador made to the Canadian government. They've tried to raise their concerns. Has there been any response?
Not that we were aware of. We, for example, back in February 2024, so just 2 months ago, we, together with our Canadian allies, we participated in parliamentary hearings in the Canadian Parliament. These were hearings organized and called by two political parties, progressive parties in political parties in Canada, in order to study the pros, to put it in simple ways, like the pros and the cons of this free trade agreement between Canada and Ecuador. And the reason for that was that up to that point, like, these free trade talks have not been discussed or on the media radar here in Canada. No one was talking about this. Like, these trade talks were being discussed sort of like behind closed doors. Right. So this parliamentary hearing in the Canadian Parliament in February 2024 was sort of like one of the first opportunities for Canadians and Canadian members of parliament to actually discuss what Canada has been discussing with the Ecuadorian government for almost a year of exploratory free trade talks. During these hearings, Amnesty International Canada, for example, as Money Watch Canada, we raised the issue of, you know, lack of transparency and the fact that Ecuadorians have not participated in this process. The Canadian ambassador to Ecuador was testified. He testified in these parliamentary hearings, and he was asked about this, if, you know, Ecuadorians were had been consulted, and he said that no, they haven't been consulted by the Ecuadorian government, and that the Ecuadorian government actually was asking the Canadian government for some tips about doing this. However, the Canadian government, even though there was some sort of like consultation for civil society organizations in Canada, this was more like a way to, you know, check to say, yes, we've consulted, but we are not actually sure that our input is being actually taken into consideration.
Well, and we talked about the Attico mining in Palo Camado. Forgive my pronunciation. There's another instance. I'm looking at an open letter that was sent to Canada's ambassador, Stephen Potter, in Ecuador regarding Solaris. Who is Solaris and what's going on there, Viviana?
Yeah, so we, during these parliamentary hearings that I just mentioned, he was also asked about this situation in the territory of the Shuararutan people in the Amazon. So Solaris Resources is a Canadian junior mining company based in Vancouver, who for over 5 years or so has been trying to advance a copper mining project in the territory of the indigenous Shuararutan people. The Shuararutan people, since day one, and even since day one, since the, you know, this Canadian mining company arrived, but way before that, since the early 2000s, they've been saying no to mining. And despite of all of this, the Canadian mining company has continued to push for this mining project using the, you know, the discourse of mining for the energy transition, that, you know, we need copper in order to, you know, for all of these technologies that need copper, like electric cars and solar panels and so on and so on. The Shuararutan people have, actually, the letter that they sent to the Canadian ambassador is not the first one. They've sent a few letters to the Canadian ambassadors in Ecuador, denouncing the presence of Solaris resources, denouncing violence inflicted by this company and the in the territory, but also death threats to some of their leadership. Despite of all of this, and the letters sent to the ambassador, and the fact that there's a policy, like guidelines that say that Canadian diplomats are need to respond to this sort of like denunciations by environmental indigenous leaders, the Canadian ambassador, none of the Canadian ambassadors actually have responded to these denunciations. So this is why we are very concerned about this, because while the Canadian embassy has openly and publicly supported companies such as Solaris Resources, they have not expressed their public support or solidarity to communities affected by Canadian mining projects. And we feel that if a free trade agreement is signed between Canada and Ecuador, things are going to get worse. And you know, given the current context, and the current context of, you know, lack of accountability and lack of a response by the Canadian government in this instance, well, it paints a very worrisome picture for Ecuador.
Well, and Canada, to deflect criticism of the practices that it supports in this regard, created, as you were mentioning, guidelines called Voices at Risk Guidelines, that these are measures that the Canadian government is supposed to carry out through their embassies in the countries affected, Ecuador in this case, when these kinds of concerns are by Indigenous people especially, but not just those, to the violence and intimidation and the threats to their communities and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. And this is not an isolated case. We've seen, this is a tendency that we see of, you know, the Canadian embassies behaving. We've seen this in countries such as Peru or Mexico or Guatemala, I mean, you name it, where even though these guidelines, Voices at Risk, exist, and they're very clear, it's very clear what it says that Canadian diplomats can do when environmental defenders come to their asking for support and aid. Canadian embassies, one time after the other one, they refuse to support these communities. And in some instances, this has had like very tragic ends, results. For example, in Mexico, in 2009, despite the fact that an environmental defender called Mariano Abarca came to the asking for help to the Canadian embassy in Mexico City because of death threats that he had received for his activism against a Canadian mining company in Mexico, the Canadian embassy in Mexico refused to talk to him, refused to even receive him at the embassy. A few months after, Mariano Barca was murdered in his hometown of Chicomucelo. So, since then, we as Mining Watch Canada, alongside many other Canadian, US, and Mexican allies, we've been denouncing the Canadian government for its actions and omissions in this case, because we fear that the fact that the Canadian embassy didn't do anything to protect Mariano Barca contributed to his precarious situation and eventually to his assassination. While the Canadian embassy refused to help Mariano Barca by providing security, by, you know, just making public statements, you know, calling for his safety, the Canadian embassy was talking to the Canadian mining company. And we know this through access to information requests. We have communication, we have emails that show that the Canadian embassy was in talks with the Canadian mining company while all of this was developing. So this is why when instances like the current one in Ecuador, where the Canadian embassy is not responding, for us is so important to make it public, because it's important to call on the responsibilities and obligations that the Canadian government through its embassies have to environmental and indigenous defenders.
Well, we're fast running out of time, Viviana. How do our listeners find out more about the work Mining Watch Canada does and perhaps get involved and help you guys in your very important works?
You can visit our website, miningwatch.ca. We are posting regularly. We write blogs, for example, about the situation in Ecuador. And, you know, in terms of our actions, advocacy actions, we are continuing to support our partners. So I will invite you to stay tuned, to visit our website, our social media, which you can find there. And stay tuned because we are in the middle of organizing with our Ecuadorian partners in order to continue to put in, you know, a spotlight into the situation in Ecuador.
Well, thanks a lot, Viviana, for coming on the show today. And I want to also thank Dave Lindorf and remind people to go to thiscan'tbehappening.substack.com to follow their journalism. Thanks again, Viviana, for coming on, eh?
Thank you so much for having me.
Is threatening about divesting and want a peace. The problem isn't the protest, it's what they're protesting. It goes against what our country is funding. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. Block the barricade until Palestine is free. When I was 7, I learned a lesson from Cuban Eazy-E. What was it again? Oh yeah, fuck the police. Actors and badges protecting property in a system that was designed by white supremacy. But the people are in the streets. You can pay off Meta, you can't pay off me. Politicians who serve by any means. APAC, Koofy, and all the companies. You see, we sell beer around the land of the free. But this generation here is about to cut the strings. You can ban TikTok, take us out the algorithm. But it's too late, we've seen the truth, we bear witness. Seen the rubble, the buildings, the mothers and the children, and all the men that you murdered, and then we see how you spin it. Who gets the right to defend and who gets the right of resistance? It's always been about dollars and the color of your pigment. But white supremacy is finally on blast, screaming free Palestine to their home at last. We see the lies and up, claiming it's anti-Semitic to be anti-Zionist. I seen Jewish brothers and sisters out there and writhing in solidarity and screaming free Palestine with them organizing and learning and finally cutting ties with the state that's gotta rely on apartheid system to uphold and occupy. Occupying violent history been repeating for the last 75. The NECPA never ended, the colonizer lied. It's students in tents, posted on the lawn. Occupying the quad is really against the law. And a reason to call and the police and their squad. Where does genocide land in your definition, huh? Destroying every college in Gaza and every mosque. Pushing everything, dropping bombs. The blood is on your hands, Biden, we can see it all. And fuck no, I'm not voting for you in the fall. Undecided. You can't twist the truth, the people out here united. Never be defeated when freedom's on the horizon. Yet the music industry's quiet, complicit in their platform of silence.
What happens to the artist? What you gotta say? If I was on a label, you could drop me today. I'll be fine with it, cause the heart fed my page. I want a ceasefire, fuck a response from Drake. What you willing to risk? What you willing to give? What if you were in Gaza? What if those were your kids? If the West was pretending that you didn't exist, you want the world to stand up, and the students finally did. Let's get it.